Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Today is March 7th, 2022. And the first order of business is to ask Ms. Niedernhofer to call the roll.
Liebling.
Present.
Hewitt.
Present.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Ackland.
Present.
Backer.
Backer, present.
Bonner.
Present.
Bierman.
Present.
Bolden.
Present.
Damath.
Present.
Freiberg.
Present.
Grunhagen.
Present.
Keel. Keel. Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Munson.
Munson, present.
Pryor. Pryor. Quam.
Present.
Pryor,
present.
And Quam, present. Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Schultz.
Present.
Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
A quorum is present.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. A quorum is present. The next order of business is approval of the minutes of March 2nd, 2022. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the minutes from March 2nd of 2022.
All right. Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none. All those in favor of approval of the minutes of March 2nd, 2022, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Bonner. All right, the first bill on our agenda for today is House Bill 2743. We have Chair Becker Finn with us, and she's not on our committee, so the chair will move that House Bill 2743 be laid over for possible inclusion in a bill, in an omnibus bill. And welcome, Representative Becker Finn. And you have an A1 author's amendment. Did you want to start with that? She does. Okay, the chair will move the A1 author's amendment. And Chair Becker Finn, would you just, is that just technical?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A1 amendment removes section one. The psychologists don't need this language. They are already doing this. So we're just removing it so we're not confusing anybody.
All right. Thank you. So any discussion to the A1 author's amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Becker Finn, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually a pretty straightforward bill. So currently statute requires most types of therapists to get their licensure hours in order to be fully licensed. It requires that they get those licensure hours with a significant number of those hours being in person. And essentially what we've learned over the last 2 years is that we do have the technology and it's very easy to get those supervision hours remotely via things like Zoom. And this is just a really good way to make sure that therapists, both people trying to become therapists and the people who provide supervision, making it easier for them to gain those hours, to save them money and time. And it does not cost, it costs a small amount to the Board of Social Work, but they're willing to incorporate those costs and won't cost this committee anything. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers because they can tell you how important this is.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. First testifier on my list is Tashina Broncho. I'm pronouncing it correctly. Welcome. Please state your name and go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Tashina L. Broncho. I'm an enrolled member of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians. I'm a mother of three. I have two in high school, one in college. I'm a wife, a Navy veteran, Minnesota Board of Social Work licensed social worker, a UMACAD certified alcohol and drug counselor, as well as a Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy licensed alcohol and drug counselor. I have earned a Bachelor of Science in Social Work and a Certificate in Alcohol Drug Counseling from Bemidji State University. I'm a graduate student working toward a Master of Science in Addiction Studies. I'm a program manager for an outpatient medication-assisted treatment program, and I'm also a crisis response team member for my local emergency room. We provide crisis intervention, screening, and safety planning for individuals experiencing mental health crisis. I'm here to give testimony in support of HF 2743, a bill authored by Representative Becker Finn to give the option to meet licensing supervision requirements via electronic means. I can attest the importance of the required supervision. I do find this time of reflection and mentorship extremely valuable. However, I do not feel as if any of that is lost when communicating via electronic means. A majority of my meetings today are held by electronic means. I attend medical appointments that do not require labs or physical contact through telemedicine. And with the advancements in technology, we can have access to a wider array of professionals focused more in our preferred field of study. Another note, it is very common for practitioners, especially in rural Minnesota, to have more than one job in the field. Continuing to require in-person supervision time creates additional barriers for those professionals. Three of the biggest barriers that I face personally with the current supervision requirement as a rural Minnesota resident is traveling. So I travel about 70 miles round trip, and that's additional costs for gas and vehicle wear and tear. I have additional time away from my family, having to pick up dinner when I'm out of town before I come back home, and there's more time spent on the road. And also there is a lack of approved supervisors in my working area, especially in my field of study. So my field is the addiction field. I work as a social worker and a licensed alcohol and drug counselor in the addiction field, and we're very limited in resources as far as those that are qualified supervisors. I kept it as brief as I could. I want to thank you for your time and consideration. I hope you guys can pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your qualifications and your work are so impressive. Thank you for being here to give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam.
Next is Jill Lee Hubble. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Jill Lee Hubble. I am a clinical supervisor. My credentials are I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor and a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. I'm also a counselor educator teaching at several universities and a PhD student completing my dissertation on clinician moral distress and how moral distress leads to clinician burnout and workforce shortages. So what I really wanted to bring forward today to just talk a little bit about HF 2743 is to highlight that in the field of behavioral health care, we do have a workforce shortage. And one of the barriers to entering the field is obtaining quality supervision that's cost effective and that is accessible. So although our rural clinicians also have a much more difficult time, we still have those barriers that exist when we're in the suburban and urban areas as well. The other thing that I think is really important to point out too is we've had 2 years of telesupervision happening, which has also provided an enormous sample size for our researchers. The research has really demonstrated that clinical supervision via telehealth platforms is secure. It's also demonstrated that it is just as effective as in-person supervision is, and that efficacy is both on the supervisor side and then also perceived by the supervisees. There's also some research that shows that supervisees are more likely to reach out to their supervisors if they can do so via telehealth, which means we're providing better and a higher quality of care to our patients and clients. I think it's really important to also kind of keep in mind that as we're coming out of the pandemic, we know that there is a tidal wave of mental health issues that is building. And so telesupervision, which we've been using for 2 years, if we're able to continue using that, we'll have a lot more resources to kind of meet more with more people and hopefully expand our field even further. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Your PhD sounds really fascinating. Next, we have Rebecca Hoffman. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm Rebecca Hoffman. I'm the chair of Bemidji State University's Social Work Department and a really proud professor of Tashina Brenshaw. So I'm thrilled to follow her in testifying today about the importance of this bill. I second everything that Tashina and Jill just shared, and I'll just add to that that there's oftentimes a lack of understanding. Social work licensure is required by law when our graduates enter the field. And so they're not necessarily receiving a lot of agency support to get their licensure hours. And as a result, many of them have to work it in on their lunch breaks and their two 15-hour breaks huddled together in order to access licensure supervision. The only way they're going to be able to do that is either after hours or during their lunch breaks. And as a supervisor, it's not typically a role of a department chair to be supervising licensees, but I do it because we have so few licensure supervisors in our community. And I'm really not interested in providing supervision after hours because I also want to go home and live my life. And so those are a couple of additional things that really make it critical for outstate Minnesota that our grads are paying for this on their own dime and on their own time. And they also, the members of my group, they are an average of 95 miles away round trip if they were to try to drive to me to have licensure supervision. And they wanted me to also share that mobility is a big deal. When you live in greater Minnesota, you tend to be a lot more mobile right after graduation, oftentimes going down to the Twin Cities for work and then coming back up north after a while, or maybe graduate school. And this way, licensure supervision can follow them during those kind of early mobile years as well. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hoffman. Are there any questions for members? All right, I'm not seeing any. So Chair Becker Finn, final word?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for making the time today. Also, in full disclosure, I am married to a licensed professional clinical counselor, and it was him getting on his jacket during one of the worst parts of the pandemic to go provide supervision to someone. And I was like, what are you doing? So this is how this was brought to my attention. It's been really great to connect with the folks from the Board of Social Work and others and find out all the great ways that this can benefit not just rural Minnesotans, but also people seeking licensure who have disabilities, as well as people who have lower incomes. This is a way to save them time and money. And I want to point members to the letters of support, as well as the fact that we have bipartisan support in the Senate as well. And just thank you for hearing our bill today.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair Becker Finn. Thanks for bringing this bill. And so House Bill 2743, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Okay, next bill is House Bill 3560, Representative Herr. Hello. And also, Representative Herr is not on the committee, so the chair will move that House Bill 3560 be laid over for possible inclusion. And there is an A1 author's amendment for this bill as well. And Representative Hirsch, should we just, is that a technical, or do you wanna give us just a brief explanation and the chair will move it. I don't know if I said that already. The chair will move the A1 author's amendment. Could you just give us a brief explanation?
Yes. Chair Liebling, I do have an author's amendment, and it is just a small change, striking language that was included but not applicable to this bill, and so this just puts the bill in its proper form.
All right, thank you. So the A1 amendment is before us. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 author's amendment is adopted. So the bill is before us as amended, and Representative Herr to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Liebling and committee, and thank you for hearing House File 3560. This bill is a technical bill. It proposes to align the license by credential process for licensed dental therapists. Minnesota has had licensed dental therapists for over 10 years, The board has a license by credential pathway for all other licensed dental professionals, such as dentists, hygienists, assistants, et cetera. This just brings the profession in line with the pathways. The language also cleans up, this bill also cleans up language as it relates to fees. It consolidates existing fees into one section for easier understanding. It eliminates fees that do not get charged and streamlines the fee to address the complaint process and also adds in a small fee for filing services. None of this actually increases the fees to individuals who are, who this particular profession governs. And so, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, the committee is aware of that there's not increases in fees for this. I did also want to just state really quick that I do have just a testifier here today who can talk to the specifics of the bill and answer any questions that the committee might have. And again, like I said before, I just wanted to make sure I point out that the, my apologies, Madam Chair. I wanted to point out that the committee, to the committee that there is a support letter that was submitted by the Minnesota Dental Association that has been included. And so at this time, I'd like to yield my time to Ms. Bridget Anderson, the Executive Director of Minnesota Board of Dentistry.
All right, thank you very much, Representative Herr. So Ms. Anderson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Bridget Anderson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. This is a bill that Representative Herr is bringing forward on behalf of the board. As she stated, we do have support from the State Dental Association and the State Dental Hygiene Association. We also have bipartisan support, and the bill has been introduced in the Senate, and we're told we should have a hearing in a few weeks. I did want to point out, she actually mentioned about the license by credential for dental therapy, and that really is important to us because right now we do not have a credential pathway for this profession. And now they are being trained in other states across the United States in accredited programs. So this is a way that allows this, and as she suggested, Representative Herr suggested, dentists, hygienists, and assistants all have this pathway as well. So this is why it's important for us. It's a forward-thinking bill. There's about 50 now credentialed throughout the United States. We in Minnesota have over 120. So this is this will apply to individuals trained in other states. The fee section, I'm going to backtrack a bit here. In the specialty section, I did get a question on that. And the specialty section is really to align that with other licensed by credential pathways and licensing pathways. So that language is only being eliminated for that reason. It's just for alignment purposes with others. And then the fee section, we are adding the fees for the licensed by credential for dental therapy if the bill goes through with that provision. And then also we are doing some cleanup language. I also received a question on that, and I wanted everyone to understand that the application and the initial license fees used to be separate, or they are right now, excuse me, in the statute. What we're trying to do is combine those so it's more understandable for applicants coming in. The administrative fines for licensees that allow their license to lapse more than a month. So that one is an addition to our fee section. We already allow a 60-day grace period between expiration of a license and termination. So what we're trying to do is the newly proposed fees would apply several months after. So this wouldn't be, you know, applicable immediately, but it'd be for individuals that do not renew and they expire and terminate the license. So right now it allows us to collect these fees instead of opening formal complaints on the licensees, which is currently the pathway that we have. What we're trying to do is save time, you know, staff time, resource, and all the administrative costs that are associated with the complaint process and ultimately the discipline process for the board. We believe that it's a leaner option for and a more streamlined method to address these types of infractions, but we're using our resources appropriately. And then we are adding a small fee for a mailing list service, which is in line with other boards. Other boards do have that service, and it's something that we do, we get requests for a lot. Typically, that was going through the Minnesota bookstore. So we're trying to also streamline that process and make that available for people. That's all I really had for today. I really appreciate your time, Madam Chair and members, and I'm open to any questions that you may have regarding our bill.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Anderson and Representative Herr. Are there any questions from members? Okay, I'm not seeing any. So with that, Thank you very much. Representative Hur, did you want to have a final word on the bill? We do have the time. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. And I just ask for support of this and for it to be included. These are just, they may seem small and technical, but it is really important for us so that we can stay up to date in Minnesota in the dentistry profession. So I appreciate the committee support.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Hur. So with that, House File 3560, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or whatever bill we put together here at the end. So thank you, Representative Hur, and thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you.
Okay, so we are going to go now. The next bill on the agenda would be House File 1888, which is Representative Hewitt, but he is in another committee presenting another bill. So if we can, we would like to go on to House File 3099, and that is Representative Bennett. Representative Bennett, are you with us here? Okay, I don't know if she, okay, she's not here yet. Okay, so members, we are in the unusual situation of being ahead of schedule and having some time here. And so I think what we may do is recess. And we can just all stay on your Zoom link and we will just stand in recess. And I think what we could probably do, I haven't done this before with the online virtual doing a committee recess. So I think what we're probably going to want to do is, let's see. Let me see if Mr. McQuillan knows if he can get Representative Bennett here. Or how soon she could be here. 1:45, I'm told. Okay. So, all right. So I think what we're going to do then is take a 20-minute recess. So let's say we'll come back at 1:45. And I think that what we can just do is everybody, you could just shut off your video if you choose to, and just be muted, and we will just come back online at 1:45. So with that, we stand in recess. All right, we are returned from recess, everyone. Thanks for your patience, and we're going to take up House File 3099, Representative Bennett's bill, and since she's not on the committee, the chair will move that House File 3099 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. So, Representative Bennett, welcome to the committee. Would you care to tell us about your bill?
I would love to. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just would like to start by saying that we all know there's a significant shortage of medical workers in Minnesota, and especially in rural Minnesota. This includes doctors, and specifically it includes podiatrists. And just recently, the city of Albert Lea lost a longtime and beloved podiatrist. He just passed away. And so that's added kind of some added stress on that particular city for shortages. And my bill would address the podiatrist shortage in a very small way by allowing for a few well-qualified and experienced podiatrists to come practice in Minnesota if they so choose. And to give you a little background, podiatrists back in the 1980s, something called preceptorships was very common. They're very similar to residencies, and I'm gonna let one of my testifiers explain that a little more. I won't get into it, but my bill addresses this particular issue. So back in the 80s, at some point in Minnesota law, preceptorships and residencies kind of all wrapped up into one and became residencies. Some podiatrists, though, did graduate with just a preceptorship. Again, very similar to residencies, same quality and so on. An example is a podiatrist in Iowa who's practicing right now. He graduated with a preceptorship in 1989. Minnesota's cutoff date, however, right now is 1986. Iowa's cutoff date is 1993. What my bill would do is create a cutoff date of 1990 to allow more podiatrists who are maybe a little closer to retirement or perhaps even retired to come and practice in Minnesota. And I've been in contact and with the Board of Podiatric Medicine, as well as the Minnesota Podiatric Medical Association, appreciated the advice and input from both. And they both explained to me that really the state that Minnesota chose was rather arbitrary. And there's no particular reason that that date was chosen. So moving it should not be an issue. Their biggest concern in this whole thing was just opening up the statute because of potential amendments. And I assured them that I would attempt to keep this kind of a pure bill so that we can hopefully help more podiatrists come practice in Minnesota. And I think we need to do more, as I know your committee is working on things like loan forgiveness, and I sure hope podiatrists will be included in that as well. But this is just another strategy, Madam Chair and committee, to help bring or help address this physician shortage, and especially in the area of podiatry. And I do have a couple of testifiers.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Bennett. So Dr. Bill, is it Boogie? Welcome. Please say your name and go ahead, and if you could give us a brief testimony.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm Bill Boogie. I'm a retired family physician in Alberley, where I practiced most of my career.
Please go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay. I'm also on the Medical Service Committee for the Alberley Healthcare Coalition. And as you already heard, we lost our most established podiatrist a couple months ago. And this leaves us with a rather acute podiatry problem, particularly in the extended healthcare facilities, which we have several of in Minnesota. And the problem came up to our Medical Services Committee, which I'm co-chairman, that the extended healthcare facilities were having problems getting adequate podiatry service done. About the same time, I was a patient of the same podiatrist who passed away recently, and he told me that he had gotten up at 4 o'clock that morning in order to make his nursing home rounds, and he'd be going back and working this evening. So I think that indicates a problem that we have with services. Then also at our Medical Services Committee, this Dr. Heinrich, who was a podiatrist in Iowa and has worked for Mercy One Health Service, of which we are affiliated at the Alberley Healthcare Coalition, said that he had a special interest in podiatry and extended healthcare institutions, and would like to come to Alberley to do that.
All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. Dr. Edward Henrich? Henrich?
Yes.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Not super well, if you would just speak up, but please go ahead, introduce yourself, and give us your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, I'm Dr. Edward S. Henrich. I practiced in Mason City, Iowa. I'm going on my 31st year practicing here, just general podiatry. And basically started years ago, I wanted to always come up and serve more patients around the North Iowa, Southern Minnesota area. And I just feel there's a definite need for more healthcare, specifically my profession, because a lot of people do not necessarily want to serve the rural areas, to go out and help in the rural communities. And one of my biggest things since I've been practicing is I try to go to the patients, and not have patients always come to me because a lot of elderly populations can't get to the rural communities. So if I as a doctor go out and help them, I see the definite benefit. And like Dr. Burt said, if there's less people around elderly, a couple of doctors have died, I believe that there is even more of a need to serve these communities. Also, a lot of the nursing homes, even in my town of Mason City, Iowa, have been underserved. And I am currently right now serving 9 nursing homes in my area because nobody wants to really do that kind of work. But that's also a piece of the puzzle that I think needs to be addressed. And I'm willing to also help serve some of the nursing home facilities around the Southern Minnesota area. Also believe that the clinic up there with Mercy being involved is going to be a great benefit for all healthcare providers in the future. And I think podiatry itself can serve well. You go to school and you take an oath to help people out. I think that's been my philosophy since I've been in practice, and to serve and to help the elderly as well as the young people around.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Henrich. We appreciate your being here today and appreciate your desire to serve the community. We have a question from Representative Freiberg.
Yes, my question is for Dr. Henrich. I'm wondering what he can tell us about Freiberg's disease.
Oh. Dr. Henrich, it sounds like there's a story here, but we may not have time for much of a story, but go ahead, please.
It's called Freiberg's infarction, I think, would be your, what you're exactly talking about, correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay, so basically that's a, in fancy words, it's called an avascular necrosis of the second metatarsal head specifically, which basically means you have a lot of trauma to that location because of all the pressure. And then the metatarsal starts to, and the joint starts to deteriorate and can cause some significant pain at different times. So down different facets of the treatment, but Freiberg's is not common, but it's out there enough that it can be helped out.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Freiberg.
Yes, my great-grandfather was an orthopedic surgeon and has a disease named after him. It sounds like Dr. Henrich knows his stuff. So every time I encounter a podiatrist, I have to ask them that question. Sounds like he knows his stuff and would be a great person to be serving the Albert Lea community.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. I'm sure he didn't know he was going to get a medical exam today. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this forward. I have one question, and I think I heard right that in Iowa, the year of cutoff was 1993, and you're looking at changing Minnesota's to 1990. And I was just curious why we weren't just aligning the dates. Thank you.
Representative Bennett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's a good question, Representative Ryer. And I guess I didn't want to highlight Iowa too much and copy them. So I figured I'd choose our own Minnesota date, but that certainly is flexible. If we match their date, that would help Southern Minnesota because, you know, we're close to Iowa and we do get a lot of transfer back and forth of citizens and health professionals too. So no particular reason. The original date was arbitrary, and I guess my date's fairly arbitrary too. So I'm certainly open to matching Iowa's date, but I don't want to give them the credit for it. So.
All right. Thank you. Last question, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. You know, it's very obvious that this is going back decades, so it's probably only referring to or in regards to experienced podiatrists. And I would think a simpler way of doing it would be allowing for a podiatrist with 10 years of experience in a neighboring state to be considered covered for residency requirement. And that might be a more straightforward way of doing it instead of referring to a date before the turn of the century. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Okay. Well, Representative Bennett, final quick word before we lay the bill over.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good thoughts by Representative Quam, and very interesting, Representative Freiberg, on your grandfather having a condition named after him. That's very interesting. But thank you so much for hearing this bill. And again, the Minnesota Board of Podiatric Medicine and the Minnesota Podiatric Medical Association are neutral on this. This was kind of the best way in addressing Representative Quam's question, the easiest way to fix this without really delving into and changing a whole lot and getting into the weeds. So sure would appreciate your consideration. Thank you so much for hearing this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Bennett. So House File 3099 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Thank you. All right, Representative Hewitt, you are on, and Representative Hewitt is bringing House File 1888. And the motion is, Representative Hewitt's motion is that it be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Hewitt, you have an A1 author's amendment. Did you care to move that right now?
Madam Chair, I do.
All right, so that is moved. Representative Hewitt moves the A1. Did you need to explain it at all, or should we adopt and then talk about the bill?
Let's adopt it and we'll talk about it together.
Okay, very good. So The A1 is before us to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer. All in favor of the A1, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. The A1 is adopted. Two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. This is not a bill that we really want to discuss, but it's here before us, and it is going to help Minnesotans, and that's what we're here to do. It's a very difficult bill because we're changing an industry that doesn't like to change. The funeral industry has not changed in years, in fact. In Minnesota, we actually, to be a funeral director, we require a four-year degree. We're one of only two states that does this. Most other states use a vocational certificate or degree from a private college or else. The thing that I want to make sure that you understand that this bill does not take away funeral directors in Minnesota or morticians.
Just glad to do it anytime.
Oh. Mr. McQuillan, could you mute people, please?
Looks like Dr. Bill.
Why don't you continue, Representative Hewitt? Go ahead.
So it does not take away their jobs, but only gives them more helpers to work with. Basically, what it will do is allow unlicensed people to do removals from the place of death. This we did during COVID, and we had no problems with it at all. It's on top of this, that person has to be supervised by a licensed mortician. That's important to understand that they just can't do this without having a supervisor that is a licensed mortician. The second part of this allows, if the mortician chooses, to use that same unlicensed person to arrange or direct or supervise a funeral or memorial graveside service. Again, if they choose not to, they don't use them and the training is all done by them. This bill actually gives local control in local say-so at the business level. So it really doesn't do what a lot of people think it's doing, is taking away the mortician in Minnesota. That's not true. The last part, the amendment's a very simple amendment that we have to fix. Again, during COVID, we found that we can store bodies in coolers and they do not have to be embalmed. So we changed the amendment does change that part of the law. And also we had a terrible situation happen during COVID where a veteran lost their limb, and because of the way the statute was written, we had to get special permission from the department to have that limb cremated. The crematorium said they couldn't do it without a death certificate. So we want to clean up things that are cumbersome in the law a little bit just to move forward. So I would like to stand forward. It sounds like we have a number of testifiers. I've asked my testifiers to keep it to 2 minutes to reserve time for questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So the first testifier I have on the agenda is Todd Anderson. Mr. Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt, thank you for allowing me to testify today, members of the committee. Our family owns and operates Johnson Williams Funeral Car Service here in the metro area. We serve not only funeral homes, but also Ramsey and Washington County's coroner's offices, as well as some autopsy companies. When our customers are in need, they decide to call us if they're not able to respond to the call or they don't have a means of getting to the call. And right now our customers are in need. And staffing is a concern not only for them, but also for us. Representative Hewitt, with his bill allowing unlicensed and trained staff to assist with the removal would be an immense help, not only here in the metro, but outstate, in my opinion. All of our employees need a background check. They need a driver record check. We have liability insurance for the company. And right now, we don't like it if medical staff and families are waiting longer than they need to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Next, I have Dwayne Wills. Mr. Wills?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for the introduction of this bill. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I'm a licensed funeral director and embalmer for over 40 years, operating my own funeral homes and cemeteries, and I currently manage funeral homes and crematories in the state of Minnesota. Additionally, I'm FEMA certified, and I have served on the board of directors of the National Funeral Directors Association and many others. Under the current statutes, regardless of the cause or place of death, Minnesota citizens are being adversely affected by having to physically wait for a licensed funeral director to take their loved one into the care. While the workload demands we're now facing by the funeral director licensee, the current statutes are simply outdated and not serving the citizens or the profession in Minnesota. As you know, the executive order was created some time ago to help public safety and the funeral directors. And to this, there was absolutely no opposition by anyone to the order or a single complaint filed by a Minnesota family that was served during that time period. The order took a pre-existing problem and provided a solution with flexibility and choice. The causation comes from the death rate, which increases year after year while the number of practicing licensees keep decreasing and ultimately increasing the demands on those funeral directors. Additionally, we have a steady decline in mortuary science enrollment, along with the graduation rate, the career retention, and retirement all compound the problem. New students do not want this life. Many simply are not entering the profession, or they go elsewhere out of state to practice. Many states have already adapted new regulations for fixing the same problem. Our average age Minnesota funeral director is 58 years of age and has no work-life balance. No other profession that we have is regulated as such with the 24/7 work requirements. And if the truth be known, the tired rural funeral director in Minnesota has probably already had their sons or their brother-in-laws making transfers of decedents in those communities to help serve the families out of just dire necessity. Thank you very much for your time and understanding of this important change that needs to be made.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wills. Paul Mayer, welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hewitt, for the opportunity to testify. I've been a licensed mortician in Minnesota.
Oh, and Mr. Mayer, before, could, you need to say your own name for the record.
Oops.
Thank you.
Okay. Paul Maher.
Thank you.
I've been licensed in Minnesota for 30 years. I own and operate cremation trade services, and I provide cremation and mortuary support to funeral homes. I'm more or less neutral on this bill because it neither helps or hurts me personally, but I care deeply about my profession and its future and the mortuary science statute that guides it. However, the greatest problem with this bill is it does not completely solve the fundamental problem that the entire statute 149A was poorly written and interpreted even worse. This bill has a great intended purpose, but is like sweeping your floors with skipping the corners of the room. For instance, right now, the text of 149A says licensed medical personnel and the performance of their duties are exempt from the statute. I think any prudent person would understand that to mean if you were a licensed EMT, paramedic, et cetera, you could do everything in the statute because it doesn't apply to you because you're exempt. And I have brought that up to the department once, and I was told it was a loophole, and I shouldn't be a loophole guy. I'm not a lawyer, but I do believe a loophole means that there's ambiguity or an omission in a text through which the intent of the statute may be evaded. There are many loopholes in the statute that need to be addressed, but never have been. There are also multiple parts of the statute that are not enforced correctly, such as the area of pre-arranging one's funeral prior to death. There is no definition as to what pre-arrangement or at-need arrangement is. There's no clear difference between them in the statute. The statute emphasizes you must be a licensed mortician to arrange, to do funeral arrangements, period. However, the practice that the vast majority of established in Minnesota is to have unlicensed persons make pre-arrangements, which is by the letter of law, is not legal. Representative Hewitt's bill will allow this practice, for instance, to be done legally by unlicensed person. Whether you're for or against the bill, it does fix some of the unaddressed issues with the statute. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Maher. Appreciate it. Next, we have Brian Dingman. Mr. Dingman, welcome to the committee. Please just state your name and your affiliation. Go ahead with your testimony. Mr. Dingman, it looks like you're unmuted, but we're not hearing you.
Sorry, I'm here.
Okay.
Like my, it won't, my video won't start. It says that I'm blocked by the administrator on it, but that's fine. We don't need to see me.
Oh,
there it is. Now it says start my video. All right. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members of the Health Committee. My name is Brian Dingman. I'm a licensed mortician and co-owner of Dingman Funeral Care Burial and Cremation Services. I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association, which represents more than 600 members and more than 200 licensed funeral establishments. The Minnesota Funeral Directors Association is opposed to House File 1888. House File 1888 seeks to permit unlicensed individuals to practice mortuary science. It also exempts them from the laws governing mortuary science, laws that protect the public and that every licensed mortician is required to follow. By carving out unlicensed personnel from the jurisdiction of the Department of Health, there's no way to prohibit them from engaging in unprofessional conduct or unethical behavior, or worse, harmful acts towards a decedent, decedent's family, or the general public. If there is a complaint, the department would have no authority to take corrective action on the unlicensed individual. This could have unintended consequences. We have seen these unintended consequences happen in numerous states, including recently in Colorado, where an individual is selling body parts of decedents entrusted into his care. The state investigators had no jurisdiction until it rose to the level of criminal allegations. While we are opposed to House File 1888, we support Senate File 3664 and its companion that will be introduced on Thursday. Senate File 3664 was crafted with vast stakeholder input and informed by a recent research study conducted by the University of Minnesota's Medical School. It provides defined training for unlicensed individuals called transfer care specialists, requires licensee supervision, and provides registration with the Department of Health for proper oversight. We will continue to work with Representative Hewitt on the issue of removals and hope to find a solution that the Minnesota Funeral Directors Association can support. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you, Mr. Dingman. Next, we have Zach Eiten. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity testify on House File 1888. My name is Zachary Eiten, and I'm a senior in the Mortuary Science Program at the University of Minnesota. I am testifying today in opposition to House File 1888 due to the ambiguity of the legislation and how its proposed changes will lower the professional standard of service in the state of Minnesota. Licensure is an important accreditation piece in the professional workforce. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 1 in 4 workers hold a certificate or license in their field. Licensure indicates that the practitioner is capable of performing their work safely, competently, while protecting public health, safety, and welfare. In regards to funeral service, licensure dates back to the 19th century in Virginia, beginning in 1894. In the current world, the conference oversees national regulatory support to licensing boards across the country. The conference uses what they call the Model Practice Act, which is a guideline for legislators when writing laws in regards to funeral service across the country. Along with the creation of the Model Practice Act, the conference recommends the requirements for all applicants. These include the applicant must be at least 18 years of age, hold an associate's degree, pass the national board exam, submit an application with all fees, complete an internship at a licensed funeral home, and be a person of good moral character. Requirement of licensure in funeral service attempts to continue the exemplary service the state of Minnesota is known for nationwide. This legislative proposal would lower the level of service with examples of malpractice abundant in states where legislation like this has been passed. Please look further into the negative effects legislation like this would cause for making such a widespread change to our industry. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. And Angela Woolsey. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Woolsey. I don't see her. Ms. Woolsey, are you with us? Okay, I don't see her. So if she comes on, we will give her a chance. But in the meantime, I think we should go to questions. Are there questions for members? Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question for, I guess, either Mr. Anderson or Mr. Wills. Just wondering about what the training requirements would be for an unlicensed person by the mortician in order to do a removal.
Okay, let's see. Mr. Anderson, did you want to take that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, in my opinion, the training that should take place would be going on calls with the licensed mortician, observing, dedicating yourself to a higher standard, and fulfilling those responsibilities to the families. Thank you.
Representative Bierman?
Yes, one follow-up, please. Just wondering also, two things. Mr. Dingman indicated that they would be practicing mortuary science. And my understanding is that these unlicensed folks would just strictly be removals. It wouldn't be involving any other mortician practices whatsoever, as I understood it. So I just wanted to check on that. And also vehicle requirements as far as removals go. Is there a mandated vehicle that needs to be used?
So let's see, maybe I should go to Representative Hewitt on this one, first of all. Representative Hewitt, do you want to address those or suggest who do you think should address those?
No, I can go ahead and address them. Nothing's going to change in the current law with removals or what people have to be trained in bloodborne pathogens or any of that. We already have unlicensed people doing removals. They are well trained. They are trained in all the areas they need to be trained in. Right now, it's just required that they have a funeral director with them. During COVID, we did not require that. So this would continue the same practice that we're doing right now, but we would require them to be supervised by a mortician. So they would not be practicing mortuary science. They would be simply helping families remove the body from the place of death to the funeral home or to where they want the body to go. Plain and simple.
Thank you. And I think Mr. Dingman wants to respond as well, I think. So Mr. Dingman, did you want to?
Thank you. The way that it's written, it says that unlicensed personnel would be able to arrange, direct, supervise funeral services. That is practicing mortuary science by definition of the National Conference of Funeral Service. So while we can say it's not intended to do that, that's what we mean by this bill has a lot of unintended consequences, and it doesn't build any guardrails into it. And it, with an unlicensed person, what we've learned from other jurisdictions is when we have people that are not governed by the health department, if there is something that goes wrong, the supervising mortician may be held accountable. But there's nothing that says that that person needs to stop or that they don't go to the funeral home down the street and start again. In the case of a business such as Mr. Anderson's business, where it's a trade service and is not licensed with the state at all, we know in other states where businesses such as that, when there's been a problem, there has not been a problem with Mr. Anderson's business that I'm aware of. I'm not saying that way at all. But in other states where they've closed up shop and then they've been able to open the next day because the business and the people doing that job have no form of registration with the state, no form of being able to be enforced. So it's a really slippery slope once we go to arrange, direct, and supervise funeral service. The Senate file 3664.
Okay, Mr. Dingman, we talked about the other Senate file. That one's not getting hearing today, okay?
Yeah.
Representative Bierman, anything further?
Madam Chair, yes, just the one question was the vehicle that can be used. And I just wondered if there was current laws on that right now. Perhaps Representative Hewitt could answer.
Okay.
Once again, Madam Chair, I can speak. Yeah, it's in statute what that vehicle has to be, Representative Bierman. It's pretty clear. Again, none of the other guidelines that involve this are being changed. This is simply, and this is a good reason to lay it over to make sure that we're getting those points in if this goes forward. So, but yes, there is already in statute a vehicle that can be used for removal and what it has to detail and what can be used and things like that. So yeah, if none of that is set to change.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for your work. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is going to be for the Department of Health, if they're on and if they can be ready. I was just curious. It's been mentioned a couple of times today about the changes that happened with the emergency powers. And just wondering how that kind of worked for the department when those changes took place, how they were able to regulate during that time with the changes from the emergency powers and the signups, and are people still operating today with that? And then if they have a position on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. I think we do have a representative from MDH, Debbie Tao. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Debbie Tao, and I work at the Minnesota Department of Health and Health Regulation Mortuary Science Section. To your question, during the waiver, all unlicensed persons who were interested in making removals did submit an application to the division so that we can monitor and have their name on a list, so that if there were any complaints, we can follow up with their licensing supervisor. And as to our position on this, we would like to remain neutral on this. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the department with that, do you know, anyone who signed up with the application piece there, are there any that are still operating today?
Ms. Tao?
I'm sorry, could you repeat your question?
If any are still operating today, of any of those who were signed up, I think that was the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, none of the individuals who registered during the waiver are acting. That expired at the end of the emergency peacetime order. So August 30th, 2021.
Okay, Ms. Tao. Representative Schumacher?
That's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Other questions? Okay. And I guess I would just like to ask Mr. Dingman, it's been mentioned that there are people, in fact, who are doing these removals now who are unlicensed, and notwithstanding what we just heard from the Department of Health, have you seen that at all? Or is it your contention that that is just not happening in the industry?
We have heard of a specific instance of it, of where we have documentation of someone doing that. And there's not the health department. It's hard for the health department to do something with that because they're not with a funeral home and not supervised. So how do you address that? How do you move forward? We have not heard of that being a widespread problem or it being an issue anywhere that it's a frequent or prevalent item. That single instance is the case where the person didn't really realize, hey, COVID's still going, that they couldn't be doing it, under my understanding, but not that we're aware of that it's widespread.
Okay, thanks. All right, well, other questions for members? All right, not seeing any. Representative Hewitt, do you want to have the final word on the bill then?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the robust discussion. I look forward to working on this bill as it moves forward. I think it's a good move for Minnesota. I do know that there are the whole question over, is there people doing this? There's people doing it every day. They use the night attendant to run the hearse out to the airport to put the body on the airplane. There's no funeral director on that airplane that's guiding that body along to the next destination. The night attendant's used in many cases, and that night attendant is unlicensed. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. That's the whole deal, is that they are using unlicensed people in funeral homes. I was one that worked in a funeral home. And so I know the workings of this, and this did not come from a metro request. This is a rural request. When I was out looking at the ambulance services, I took a look at the funeral homes at the same time. There are mom and pop shops that are not going to be able to make it because they cannot get staff. And that's really what we're looking at. I mean, this is, if my co-author on this is Representative Jordan. he has a number of funeral homes in his area that told him they need help. And so I look forward to working with Mr. Dingman here and moving forward. I think we can come up with a resolution on some parts of this. And remember, there's another question here, pre-need, at-need. That's another one, because we do on pre-need. I beg to differ with Mr. Dingman on this, but I know for a fact that those people are unlicensed that are doing those arrangements. And I think that's something we can fix as this bill goes forward. So, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing the discussion today, and I look forward to working with you to move forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Representative Hewitt, for taking on some of the tough issues, which you so often do. And I would just say to members that take a look at Minnesota Statute 214, which talks about what you need to show for health licensing. And it really talks about safety being the issue. We know that when we think about licensing, I think one of the testifiers here today mentioned how many professions in Minnesota are licensed. I have to say, I think that can be problematic. There is a role for licensing for sure, and it is about keeping people safe. But remember, when we license somebody, we lock out somebody else. And if we're locking out somebody who could be practicing safely, who doesn't need to be licensed to actually do a job, ultimately, this is not a good thing for the whole. So it's often difficult to sort through these different issues and figure out where that line is. But if you look at chapter or Minnesota Statute 214, it really lays out the considerations we should have here. And especially as we face these workforce shortages, I think our challenge is to be able to draw the line, as we did in, for example, in Representative Bennett's bill, an arbitrary requirement that's keeping somebody from coming to Minnesota to practice isn't necessarily a good thing. So anyway, I really appreciate the testifiers on this bill. I think it's a very difficult issue. It's very difficult for those of us who don't often work with mortuary science and mortuary science issues, but it's a critical, critical issue for the people of Minnesota. And so I really appreciate all of you who are here today on this bill. So with that, House File 1888 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And that is all that we have for today. Tomorrow's hearing is going to be some other scope of practice and licensing bills. We have a couple of them that deal with pharmacists, one from Representative Morrison, one from Representative Hollins. We have another that comes from the Board of Medical Practice, and then we have one concerning physician assistants. So we look forward to seeing you all tomorrow. And with that, we stand adjourned.